and your life.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's briefing call. My name is Sydney Jones with Covington. Today, we are discussing EU privacy and COVID-19 presented by some of our leading experts in the privacy space. Just a little housekeeping before we get started. All of your lines have been muted, but if you have any questions during the presentation, please email me at sjones@cov.com. Again, that's sjones@cov.com. We have allocated time at the end of the presentation to answer those questions that we have received prior to today's presentation, and we'll follow up on any questions that you submit during the call. Now, without further ado, I will turn it over to Dan Cooper, partner in our Brussels office. Dan, please go ahead.
Thanks, Sydney, and welcome, everyone. We're very pleased that you could join us today for this Covington briefing. We will be discussing the guidance that European data privacy regulators have released in the past few weeks, attempting to clarify how European data privacy rules should be applied by organizations seeking to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. We'll have some time at the end of our talk to answer some of the questions you've submitted, and we'll follow up with those of you who send in any questions during the course of the briefing. But first, our thoughts are with you and your families and friends and loved ones at this difficult time, and we hope that you and they are safe and healthy. My name is Dan Cooper. I'm a partner in the firm's privacy and cyber team, and today I'm joined by other members of our European practice. So let me introduce you to the members of our ensemble cast. We have Christoph von Quathem, Anna Oberschelp, Mark Young, Luca Tassoni, and Lars Lensdorf. And although we would normally be presenting from our respective offices in Brussels, Frankfurt, and London, COVID-19 forces us to try something new, and we're presenting from our respective home offices, where we expect many of our listeners will be as well. Now, we hope that you'll bear with us in case we encounter any technical glitches on today's call as we tread into unfamiliar territory, to be quite frank. Now, our goal today is simple. We'd like to leave you with a clear sense of where European regulators are landing in terms of balancing individual privacy protections against the legitimate needs of employers and others to gather and share information, including sensitive health data, from their employees, contingent workers, customers, and other members of the public in order to protect their workforce and prevent the spread of coronavirus. Now, you'll hear today that the situation is complex, notwithstanding a statement last week from the European Data Protection Board. And frankly, not all regulators are seeing eye to eye on the issues. Now, it's perhaps not surprising that Italy's data privacy authority, the Garante, was the first to issue guidance on COVID-19, given the challenging situation in northern Italy and the Lombardy region. Now, that was quickly followed by France's regulator, the CNIL, on March 6th, and then the GIODO in Poland. Now, from there, we saw other European privacy regulators releasing statements, guidance, FAQs, and other materials on COVID-19 in very rapid succession, none of which appeared very well coordinated. And as of today, nearly every European regulator, along with the Data Protection Board, has published some sort of statement or guidance document generally directed at employer organizations trying to curb or prevent the spread of infection within their workforce. We've seen at least one regulator direct themselves to data subjects. And in a few instances, the messaging is focused specifically upon telecoms firms who increasingly are being asked to share user data with local health authorities, typically to assess the general effectiveness of public health measures like lockdowns and movement restrictions. Portugal may be the only authority yet to put out something, and presumably the embarrassment factor of being the only regulator not to do so will force its hand soon. Now, decisions to release guidance seem to be taken on the fly, reflecting the rapidly escalating nature of the pandemic. For example, when we spoke with agency officials at the UK ICO in early March, after the CNIL's guidance was released, we were told they had no immediate plans to issue their own guidance. Then only a few days later, the ICO uploaded a statement, guidance, and then finally a blog post on its website. Now, looking outside the EU, the situation appears much the same. We've witnessed privacy regulators issuing more and more COVID-19-inspired guidance, such as in Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, Switzerland, Argentina, and Israel. Now, if you're curious as to what guidance is out there, I would invite you to review Covington's COVID-19 webpage, where we've uploaded a table which reflects national guidance that at least we're aware of having been issued. Now, as you probably expected, these materials are not consistent in their approach and tone, reflecting the differing underlying legal frameworks operating in those countries. Today, however, we're going to be more modest in our ambitions given the time constraints, and we're only intending to cover certain major European markets: Germany, Spain, Italy, the UK, Ireland, France, the Netherlands, and Belgium. And unfortunately, time doesn't permit us to discuss everything that's been released in Europe, but we think that knowing where these countries land will provide you with a good sense of the overall picture. Now, generally speaking, anyone reading the regulatory guidance will be struck by the tone. Nearly all are very quick to state that privacy laws should not serve as a barrier to the effective containment of the virus. To quote the Data Protection Board, data protection rules, such as the GDPR, do not hinder measures taken in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. They go on to say the fight against communicable diseases is a valuable goal shared by all nations, and therefore should be supported in the best possible way. Now, these views were echoed by the Executive Committee of the Global Privacy Assembly, or the GPA, which, if you don't know, is comprised of over 130 global data privacy commissioners. Now, the GPA put out a statement just last week to reiterate that the Assembly of Regulators were, to quote, confident that data protection requirements will not stop the critical sharing of information to support efforts to tackle this global pandemic. Data protection authorities, or so they said, stand ready to facilitate the swift and safe data sharing to fight COVID-19. Now, that said, not all is plain sailing, and privacy regulators, by and large, do seem to be coming back to the same set of concerns as companies try to respond to the spread of the coronavirus and seek to ring-fence their workforce, assuming that workforce hasn't been put on lockdown, and protect their business. Mostly, these concerns are associated with disproportionately aggressive measures being deployed by organizations to identify and track individuals who may present particular risks of having or spreading the virus. Now, those include, for instance, legal basis issues. Now, here, regulators are considering when and on what legal basis under the GDPR it's appropriate for organizations to collect sensitive health data. Should this be Article 9.2b to carry out obligations in employment laws, 9.2g to meet substantial public interests, or 9.2i to satisfy public interest in the area of public health? Or are there other options like consent or processing necessary to protect a person's vital interest? Or to take transparency. Now, here, regulators are requiring organizations to be very transparent, as you would expect, when they collect this information about how it will be handled, with whom it may be shared. For instance, will it be shared with national health authorities or with senior business management, and for how long it will be retained. And then finally, proportionality. Now, here, regulators are particularly concerned that some organizations may begin acting as quasi-health authorities and proactively assembling health databases by requiring individuals to report on their health status and to submit to screening measures like temperature readings or actual diagnostic tests where those are available. Now, while there may be some common concerns, as we will hear from the speakers today, there are very different views being expressed at the member state level. Certain regulators appear to be adopting a be proportionate and use good judgment type approach, while others are expressing a more cautionary tone, warning companies that certain practices, such as requiring employees or visitors to answer health surveys or questionnaires, or taking temperature readings, or otherwise collecting health information, does raise serious compliance risks. Now, for today's briefing, I'll be calling upon my colleagues across Europe to discuss local guidance and views. As I mentioned earlier, we'll respond to the questions that we've received ahead of today's call at the end of this talk, and we'll follow up with those of you who send in your questions during or after today's call. Now, for this tour of Europe, we'll begin with France, the Netherlands, and Belgium, which will be handled by my colleague Christophe Van Quathem. Now, Christophe, France's CNIL was one of the first authorities to issue guidance. Can you tell us a little bit about what they're saying, and how does that compare to what we're seeing in Belgium and in the Netherlands?
Yes, thank you, Dan. Well, as I said, the CNIL was among the first to issue guidance, and apparently that was triggered by the many questions they received, and they were probably a bit rattled by the nature of those questions. They start by specifically saying what employees should not do, namely recording temperatures of employees and rolling out questionnaires to ask employees about their health and whereabouts. So basically, the CNIL was very concerned about a organized, proactive collection of health data. That clearly, according to the CNIL, should not be done, even in the current circumstances. Then again, employers were allowed and actually expected to take preventive measures and to raise awareness of employees. Employees, on the other hand, according to the CNIL, have an obligation to inform their employer if they suspected having been in contact with the virus, so that the employer could indeed take the preventive measures. And in that case, the employer could record that fact. But actual collection of health data, according to the CNIL, remains the responsibility of basically healthcare professionals, so the competent authorities that in a working relationship are authorized and expected to collect health data about employees, and that is not the employer. Now, overall, the CNIL guidance is very short. It basically fits on one page and has not really been updated since it was released. So very short guidance. The Belgian guidance, as is often the case, is very much based on the CNIL guidance, but it is a bit more informative. It's a bit more elaborate. But the basic idea is the same. So no organized, proactive search and recording of symptoms. That's the job of competent health authorities. That's not the job of the employer. And the regulator points out very clearly that employers have no good legal basis for going beyond that and for collecting health data about employees. The regulator explicitly says that the employer cannot rely on vital interests, on the vital interest legal basis. They also say that the other legal basis under Article 9 in the relation of the public health or public interest can also not be relied upon really by an employer unless they act under the instruction of an authority. So if an authority would tell an employer, you had a number of cases here, we want you to collect this data or we want you to take these measures, then you could do it, but not otherwise. Again, that type of data should be treated and processed by competent health bodies, not by employers. What's notable in the guidance, and actually quite interesting in a way, is that the regulator says that the mere taking of temperature is not processing covered by the GDPR. It's only covered by the GDPR if you record the temperature. Then again, in an employment context, the authority says that probably under employment law, an employer could still not even take the temperature. So it may not be prohibited by the GDPR or data protection law, but it's probably prohibited by labor law. But it's interesting for other contexts than an employment relationship, where the mere taking of temperature and having an indication of a possible infection would, according to the Belgian regulator, not be considered as data processing as long as you don't record that fact. It might still be a privacy issue, but not a data protection issue. Finally, the authority indicates that employers should not reveal to other employees which employees have been infected. According to the regulator, that's not necessary, that information. So you can indicate that someone has been infected in the company and take preventive measures, but there's no need to share the name of the individual. And finally, the Dutch guidance is in line with the Belgian and French guidance, in the sense that they are, it's actually a bit stricter even than the French and Belgian guidance, in the sense that they say that an employer should never collect any health data. So even if an employee volunteers the information, it should not be recorded. Only competent bodies, health bodies, are allowed to process health data. So a very strict position, actually, of the Dutch authority. On the other hand, the authority does recognize that these are exceptional times and shows indications of flexibility, only not in the employment relationship, but not so much in the employment relationship. One area where they show some flexibility is that they think that an employer should be allowed to send employees home when they think they might be infected, something that in ordinary circumstances they couldn't do. The authority shows flexibility in other areas. They, for example, apparently allowed for a somewhat more flexible interpretation of anti-spam rules in order to invite retired health professionals back to work, professionals that they would otherwise couldn't contact, for example, by email because they didn't have the consent. Apparently here the authority said, well, in this particular circumstance, we accept that you do. They also accept that in exceptional circumstances, a physician should be allowed to communicate with his or her patients using popular communication channels, such as Skype, something that in other circumstances they would not accept. In this particular case, they think this should be possible if there's really no other means to communicate with the patients. And finally, they agreed that under the circumstances, they should give data controls more time to respond to the regulator if there is a concern. For example, in the context of an enforcement effort or an investigation by the regulator, they do understand that controls face extraordinary circumstances and that it may be more difficult for controls to assemble all the information that the regulator is asking. So they said they will be a bit flexible there in terms of the timing to respond to such investigations. So this is basically the summary for those three countries. And back to you, Dan.
Great. Thanks, Christoph. So some flexibility in some respects, but overall pretty conservative positions. We're going to be turning now our attention to further south, and so I'm going to turn it to Anna, who's going to speak a bit more about the situation in Spain. And so for Anna, what are the chief concerns that are now being expressed or have been expressed by the Spanish regulator in its guidance, and how does their position relate to, say, what's happening in France or in Belgium or the Netherlands, for that matter?
Oh, thank you, Dan. So the Spanish regulator issued a guidance and an FAQ. The guidance mainly discusses the legal basis for processing personal data. It more generally assesses what measures controllers are generally taking now in order to control the COVID-19 spreading in Spain. And the FAQ is really directed at employers. And as the name assumes, it probably gathers all the most frequently asked questions by employers to the Spanish regulator. So these are the two main elements of guidance by the Spanish regulator. But the guidance is actually very interesting because it takes a different stance than the Belgian authority. So it talks about one legal basis in particular. It talks about the processing of personal data for the protection of the vital interests of persons. As most of you know, this legal basis is very rarely used. Generally, it's used in life and death situations. For example, if a doctor needs to know the blood type of a patient that's in coma, you would be able to rely on this legal basis. But now it seems from the guidance that in this situation of pandemic and taking into account the critical situation in Spain, the regulator is saying that one can interpret this legal basis, and now I'm quoting, in the broadest possible way. So meaning that a controller can rely on an abstract need to protect the vital interests of persons by preventing them from getting infected by COVID-19. And on top of that, it even goes further. And it says that the persons whose vital interests need to be protected, they do not need to be identified. In fact, it says that the persons only need to be identified. So this suggests that an abstract need to protect the vital interests of persons, in this case, not to get infected by this virus, would be sufficient to rely on this legal basis. But what we just heard from Christoph, based on, from the Belgium guidance, was that the Belgium said, at this point of time, I think the guidance also talks about, based on the latest information issued by the public health authorities in Belgium, there is no justification at this time in Belgium to rely in a broad and systematic way on this legal basis. Well, the situation in Spain is clearly different and is also more critical, as you all know. And so by saying, I think that by saying this in the Belgium guidance, so by saying that the situation is based on the latest information received by the public health authorities, it means that if the situation in Belgium becomes more critical, and maybe as critical as in Spain, maybe the regulator would even change its mind on it. So it also demonstrates a bit that this guidance may be flexible and may change with time.
Well, Anna, what kind of measures then are the Spanish authorities allowing employers to take? Can you say a bit of something about that?
Sure. So the FAQ talks about rolling out questionnaires. So this would be questionnaires to employees, asking them whether they have symptoms, whether they have been in contact with someone that has symptoms or has been tested positive, or whether this person, so these employees, have been in high-risk zones. The guidance also suggests that these questions can be made to persons that are visiting their premises. But the guidance says that an employee, just like the Belgian and French guidance says, that an employee has an obligation to disclose to the employer if they think that they might be infected by the COVID-19 virus. The guidance actually goes even further because it says that an employer has an obligation to verify the health status of an employee. So according to the guidance, this is an obligation that stems under labor laws, so Spanish labor law, in particular occupational hazard prevention laws. The guidance doesn't go into detail what this actually means, what measures actually need to be taken to verify the health of employees, and this would certainly need to be assessed under Spanish labor law.
Great. Thanks, Anna. We're going to change tack now and focus on two different countries, the United Kingdom and Ireland, and so I'm going to direct to my colleague Mark here. Now, Mark, the UK and Ireland have a reputation for adopting more pragmatic approaches to privacy matters. Now, is that the case here and with COVID-19? And what can you tell us about how the ICO and the Irish DPC are responding to this situation?
Sure. Thanks, Dan, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. As you rightly said at the beginning, a lot of the regulatory guidance emphasizes that privacy laws should not serve as a barrier to the effective containment of the virus. And candidly, I expect that many of our listeners today will be thinking, what is the real world risk here, given the exceptional circumstances that we find ourselves in, where we see the authorities in London scrambling to convert an exhibition center into a hospital, and in the case of Madrid, an ice rink into a temporary morgue? And the ICO addresses this head on. In a statement that it published 2 weeks ago, the ICO said that it is a, quote, reasonable and pragmatic regulator, one that does not operate in isolation from matters of serious public concern, and that when it comes to compliance with data protection, it will, and again I quote, take into account the compelling public interest in the current health emergency. And this tone continues in its guidance for organizations, the first sentence of which just underlines that we know you might need to share information quickly or adapt the way that you work. Data protection doesn't stop you doing that. It's all about being proportionate. If something feels excessive from the public's point of view, then it probably is. So the ICO follows this up by saying that it understands that resources are being diverted, of course. It will not penalize organizations that need to prioritize other areas or adapt their usual approach to compliance during this extraordinary period, and as a result don't meet their usual data privacy standards or where their response to information rights requests take longer. The ICO makes it clear that although it can't extend statutory timescales, it will tell people through its own communications channels, and we've seen this on Twitter and the like, that individuals may experience understandable delays when making information rights requests during the pandemic. So that's the general picture from the ICO. It also tackles some common questions. First, can you tell staff that a colleague may have potentially contracted COVID-19? One word answer, yes. You should keep staff informed about cases in your organization. But echoing guidance from other European regulators, the ICO cautions against naming individuals, as that's probably unnecessary, and you shouldn't provide more information than necessary. You have an obligation to ensure the health and safety of your employees, as well as a duty of care. Data protection doesn't prevent you doing this. Second question, can you collect health data in relation to COVID-19 about employees or from visitors to your organization? The answer here is a little more guarded. You have an obligation to protect your employees' health, but that doesn't mean you need to gather lots of information about them. So it would be reasonable to ask people to tell you if they're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms. The general advice is minimize the information you need to collect. If you do have a business need to collect specific health data, don't collect more than you need, and ensure that any information collected is treated with appropriate safeguards. Third, can you share employees' health information to authorities for public health purposes? The ICO says yes. Although it's unlikely that your organization will have to share information with authorities about specific individuals, if it's necessary, then data protection law won't stop you from doing so, according to the ICO. And that is about the extent of the guidance from the UK ICO. It doesn't go into any detail on different legal bases, which possibly tells you a story in itself. Turning then to Ireland, the tone of the guidance from the Irish DPC is broadly similar, although it is a bit more legalistic. The DPC highlights several legal bases for processing health data that may be relevant. For example, again, employers have a legal obligation to protect their employees, and locally that comes under the Safety, Health and Welfare at Work Act 2005. So together with Article 9.2b of the GDPR, this obligation provides a legal basis to process personal data, including health data, where it's deemed necessary and proportionate to do so. Any data that's processed should be treated in a confidential manner, so any communications to staff about the possible presence of coronavirus in the workplace do not generally identify any individual employees. The DPC also recognises that processing may be justified in order to protect the vital interests of an individual data subject or others where necessary, or where acting on the guidance or directions of public health authorities. A few other points from the DPC. It underlines the need to be transparent about the measures that you implement, including about the purpose of collecting the data and how long you'll retain it. Similar to the ICO, the DPC emphasises that only the minimum necessary amount of data should be processed to achieve the purposes of implementing measures to prevent or contain the spread of COVID-19. When it comes to employee questionnaires, the DPC considers that employers generally would be justified in asking employees to inform them if they're experiencing symptoms, but before deploying a questionnaire, you'd need to have a strong justification based on necessity, proportionality and risk, and taking into account any directions or guidance of the public health authorities. Other aspects of the Irish guidance mirror the UK guidance, such as avoiding naming names of employees who have tested positive and acknowledging the significant impact of the health crisis on organisations' ability to action GDPR requests from individuals. And on a related and final point, Dan, in an updated statement yesterday in relation to DSARS, the DPC stated, and I quote, "We are very alive to the unprecedented challenges facing organisations and the need for a proportionate regulatory approach in response to these extraordinary circumstances." DPC goes on to recommend that if you are experiencing difficulties in responding to requests, you should, where possible, communicate with the individuals concerned about the handling of their request, including any extension to the period for responding and the reason for the delay. As many of you will know, the GDPR provides for an extension of 2 months to respond to a request where necessary. DPC also suggests that organisations that experience difficulties in responding to requests should consider whether it is possible to respond to requests in stages and to try to engage with individuals in order to ensure that requests are as specific as possible in relation to the personal data sought in order to minimise the work involved. If, however, due to the impact of COVID-19, you can't respond to a request in full or in part within the statutory timelines, you do, when it comes to it, remain under an obligation to comply and should ensure that the request is actioned as soon as possible. You should document your reasons for not complying within the timelines and communicate clearly with the affected individuals. So that's a summary for the UK and Ireland. Dan, back to you.
Great. Thanks, Mark. And it's nice to see that sort of philosophy of pragmatism is still applied I have a feeling it won't be seen in the next country we're going to examine, which is Italy. And so I'm going to ask my colleague Luca to say a few words about that. And so, Luca, you know, Italy is certainly one of the European countries that's been most affected by the outbreak to date. We heard that the Garante was one of the first to issue guidance. Can you say anything about how or what the position is there and how what is happening in Italy has affected the approach taken by the authority, the Garante?
Sure. Thanks, Dan. Well, surprisingly enough, the Garante seems to have taken one of the strictest approaches so far in Europe, despite, as you said, you know, the seriousness of the situation in Italy at the moment. So as you have said, Dan, the Garante was probably the first data privacy authority to issue a statement on COVID-19 at the beginning of March. And that statement was very short and not too elaborate, to be frank. But the key message was essentially that companies should not engage in the spontaneous collection of data on the symptoms or whereabouts of their employees unless this was specifically required by law or requested by the competent health authority. According to the Garante, the collection of such information should normally be left to healthcare authorities. Well, to be very clear, you know, this was the position the Garante took early in March, and it is not entirely clear whether the worsening of the situation in Italy since the publication of the statement has led the Garante to reconsider, at least partially, its position. So far, what we know is that the statement of the Garante has not been updated, but the authority has recently republished on its website the statement of the European Data Protection Board on COVID-19, which may suggest that the Garante now shares the position expressed in that document regarding legal basis and other issues. In any event, as I said, the Garante expressly mentioned in its statement that the proactive data collection activities should be avoided unless such activities are required by law or requested by the competent authorities. And the normative landscape is changing rapidly in Italy. For example, on March 14, so after the publication of the Garante's statement, the Italian government and several trade unions have signed a protocol which establishes specific procedures for fighting COVID-19 in the workplace. Among other things, the protocol provides that employers may subject their employees to real-time temperature checks before the employees enter the workplace, and provided that certain transparency, security, and storage limitations are respected. The protocol also provides that employers may ask their employees to declare whether in the last 14 days they have been in contact with infected individuals or have visited risk areas. In essence, I think that companies should be aware that the Garante statement should be read in light of the normative developments that have followed or will follow its publication. So to conclude, I would also like to flag that in these days, the Garante seems to be mainly concerned about the possible introduction in Italy of some form of contact tracing through the use of mobile phone data, a bit like it is happening in other countries. And the Garante seems to be open to this option, but thinks that this requires the adoption of specific and temporary legal measures that comply with proportionality and necessity criteria. And I think I will leave it there for now and turn it back to you, Dan.
All right. Thanks, Luca, very much for that summary. And for the final country we intend to focus on today, Germany, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Lars and ask Lars, have any of the German data protection authorities there issued special guidelines or opinions on the handling of personal data in connection with COVID-19? And if so, can you say a few words about what they're addressing, what are the key issues, and what are the key concerns that they're raising? Lars?
Yeah, sure, Dan. Thank you. So, as you might know, Germany has 16 different data protection authorities in each state and one federal data protection authority. The authorities do not always have the same opinion. However, with regard to the COVID-19 pandemic, the so-called Conference of German Data Protection Authorities, in German the DSK, a body in which all data protection authorities are represented, has issued a statement with guidance on the proper handling of personal data by employers in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to that, the Data Protection Supervisory Authority of Baden-Württemberg has issued a very similar statement. The key statements of both guidances are as follows. First, in line with the European Data Protection Board, the data protection authorities make clear that the protection of personal data and measures to combat that infection, including the processing of health data, do not contradict each other so long as the principle of proportionality and the prerequisites of the respective legal basis are observed. Second, against this background, it is in general considered compliant with data protection laws for companies to collect and process personal data, including health data, of employees, guests, and visitors to the company premises in order to determine whether they are infected or have been in contact with a person who is proven to be infected or have been in an area classified as a high-risk area. Third, both the Conference of the German Data Protection Authorities and the Data Protection Supervisory Authority of Baden-Württemberg refer to the employer's duty of care towards its employees, which might require certain measures which might have an impact on data privacy issues. Furthermore, both note that also the employees have a duty under their employment contract to disclose limited personal information that enables the employer to determine whether they pose a risk to other employees. Fourth, while persons with whom an infected person has been in contact should be warned, the disclosure of the specific identity of infected or potentially infected person to others with whom they may have been in contact is only permitted if this is exceptionally necessary. Fifth, referring to your, Dan's, initial statement regarding the legal basis for data processing, please note that there are specific legal bases for the processing of personal data of employees in the German Data Protection Act. The relevant sections are Section 26, paragraph 1 for the general or normal personal data, and Section 26, paragraph 3 for special categories of data, including health data. Six, as Dan has mentioned at the beginning, some authorities want to prevent that employers act as quasi-healthy authorities. This is in line with the guidance of the Supervisory Authority of Baden-Württemberg, which encourages the employers to liaise and to collaborate closely with the competent health authorities in investigations and the implementation of measures against the spread of COVID-19. In addition to the statements of the supervisory authorities, the German Federal Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs also published a coronavirus FAQ for employees, which includes information about measures that employers may take to protect the, which employers may take to protect their employees. In line with the guidance of the Data Protection Supervisory Authorities, the German Federal Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs points out that the obligation of the employee to disclose COVID-19 relevant personal information towards the employer, and under certain circumstances, the obligation of the employer to conduct a risk assessment that considers the health and safety of its employees to develop appropriate protective measures to mitigate identified risks. In summary, it can be stated that with regard to the general principles, the guidelines of the Conference of the German Data Protection Authorities, the Supervisory Authority of Baden-Württemberg, and the German Federal Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs follow the same principles. However, with regard to specific issues and the nitty-gritty details, the situation is not that clear. In particular, the advice of the Supervisory Authority of Baden-Württemberg to cooperate closely with the health authorities raises the question which measures the employer can take alone and which have to be coordinated with the health authorities. Finally, I would like to draw your attention to the National Pandemic Plan and the German Infection Protection Act. The National Pandemic Plan sets out a strategy for health authorities to track persons who have been in contact with confirmed COVID-19 cases, as well as persons who have recently been in a high-risk region. Important to know, the competent authorities may also order employers to collect personal information from their employees. Last but not least, an update with regard to the Infection Protection Act. Yesterday, an amendment of the Act passed the German Parliament. The amendment broadens the rights of the government and has also a significant impact on privacy, which was criticized by the Federal Data Protection Officer and some members of the German Parliament. For example, persons entering Germany are now obliged to provide information on their contact person, travel routes, and their state of health. Furthermore, companies from the transportation sector shall be obliged to cooperate in the collection of this data. So that's in a nutshell the current situation in Germany. Back to you, Dan.
Great. Thank you, Lars. And that last development is probably something we're seeing across other EU member states as information is being sought from different industries to help track and prevent the spread of the virus. So that concludes our tour of Europe. And so we wanted to spend the remaining time on the call to address some of the questions you raised with us ahead of this call. And so we'll start with a question that a number of you raised concerning employee temperature checks and screening. They kind of broadly summarized the issue. Most of these questions related to whether and when temperature checks and screening of employees could take place. Is it possible for an employer to refuse entry where an employee refuses to be screened? Can it be made mandatory? And in countries where it's not permissible, what is permissible? So I'll hand this one over to my colleagues, Luca and Anna. Luca, perhaps you could start us off with your thoughts on this question.
Sure, Dan. I think, you know, some of our colleagues have already addressed some of the key issues here. And as it has already been explained during this call, the position regarding temperature checks varies from country to country. And unfortunately, we don't have much time now to discuss every jurisdiction in detail. However, I would say that in short, whether you can turn away an employee who refuses a voluntary test depends on the country and whether it would be reasonable in the circumstances to refuse entry on grounds that the person represents a risk to the rest of the workforce. If an employee refuses a voluntary test, then it would probably be appropriate to ask him or her to confirm that they've not been suffering symptoms and have not been around anyone with the virus in the past couple of weeks. For example, the Italian protocol that I mentioned would allow employers to ask this kind of questions and says that employees who experience symptoms should be sent home. Also, I would say that enabling employees to self-check their temperature but without any collection of temperature data would also be probably acceptable in most countries. And as for the introduction of mandatory temperature checks, these are in some countries permissible, like in Italy, but not in others, as we have heard, like in France, Luxembourg, or Sweden, which hasn't been discussed so far. In this regard, I would say that it's interesting also to know that some data protection authorities, like the Bulgarian DPA, do engage in the proactive check of the temperature of their own employees and visitors. So this also would suggest that these kind of measures are somehow acceptable also in the private sector. And in any event, data protection authorities may in the future relax their position on temperature checks as the virus keeps spreading across Europe. So it is important that companies keep on monitoring this space, and we will certainly do. Over to you, Dan.
All right, thanks, Luca. Maybe, Anna, could you say something about the position in Spain and how they're looking at this issue?
Sure. So this is actually a question in the FAQ released by the Spanish regulator. And the regulator actually says that this is possible, so temperature checks are possible. But as I mentioned before, the FAQ goes even further. It says that an employer has an obligation to verify the health status of employees. Again, what this means in practice needs to be checked concretely also under labor laws, Spanish labor laws. But yes, yeah, so the FAQ says that temperature checks are possible if they comply with the GDPR and, amongst others, are only used to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So the purpose limitation seems to be very important here for the Spanish supervisory authority.
Great. Thanks, Anna. So another question we received relates to disclosing an employee's personal non-business contact details within the organization, for instance, for emergency purposes. The question was, are regulations being relaxed with respect to internal disclosures of an employee's contact information, for instance, personal home numbers, cell numbers, and so forth, for emergency contact usage? And is this on a regional or global basis? And would opt-outs notice mitigate the risk? I'd like, Christoph, could you possibly address this question, please?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Dan. I think so far we haven't seen any regulator formally expressing relaxed views in that respect, and I don't think we'll see that very soon. So formally, no. I think in practice there will be an understanding that in these exceptional circumstances, some data of personnel that is otherwise not randomly shared will be shared now, simply because people are working from home and have to be reached in other ways than they are used to. So I think this is something that, from a practical perspective, will happen, even without a formal endorsement of regulators, and I think it's very unlikely that regulators will heavily enforce in that area. I think what is important, however, is that once this crisis is over and we go back to normal, that kind of data, that we also go back to normal in terms of the data that we share about employees, so that if any system was set up to share more freely data that is otherwise not shared, like mobile phone numbers and the like, or emergency numbers, that once this crisis is over, that we go back to normal, that sharing stops, that data is taken offline, if it's made available internally. But I don't think that is the focus of regulators right now. Back to you, Dan.
All right. Thanks, Christoph. And a timely reminder that things will at some point go back to normal. One thing that has been alluded to so far is that we've been seeing some pressure being placed on telcos operating in Europe, particularly to share user data with health and other public authorities. And so one listener asked, what safeguards under e-privacy rules should supervisory authorities impose on telcos that provide location data to authorities in order to help map users in the fight against the virus? And what about apps that track individuals? Should that be permitted? Lars, would you be able to address this question or questions?
Yeah, sure. So that is really an interesting and difficult question from my point of view. So we are currently experiencing very intensively that fundamental rights, in particular privacy rights, can be in conflict with our interests, in particular public health, and that is necessary to bring the conflicting interests in a reasonable balance. With regard to the tracking of persons, this is on the one hand the general right of personality, of course, and on the other hand, the duty of care and protection of the state towards its population. As we know from China, Israel, and in particular also from South Korea, these countries have used mobile data of telecom providers to a very great extent to combat the spread of COVID-19. And in particular, South Korea has had great success with this strategy. And as was announced last week, Deutsche Telekom has also provided mobile data to the Robert Koch Institute for analysis and combating COVID-19. In contrast, however, to the transfer of the data in China, Israel, and South Korea, this was probably not personal data, but anonymized data, as the Federal Data Protection Commissioner in Germany also confirmed. As we have learned from the news on Monday, also the European Commission has requested major telecom providers to share anonymized and aggregated mobile data with the European Commission in order to track how the virus was spreading. And the Commission insisted the operation would respect the GDPR and e-privacy legislation, and the European Data Protection Supervisor would also be involved. In connection with numerous amendments, and I've also already mentioned that at the beginning, in connection with numerous amendments and new laws passed by the German Parliament yesterday, regulations were initially also planned to significantly expand the use of mobile data in also a non-anonymized form in the combat against COVID-19. However, these regulations have been heavily criticized, especially by the Federal Data Protection Commission, so that the regulation was not adopted. The examples of China, Israel, and South Korea on the one hand, and in the European Union, including Germany on the other hand, make clear, from my perspective, that a general answer to the question is not possible, and that different countries have different answers. In my view, it is important to always consider the effects on the fundamental rights, especially the general right of personality and privacy, and to ensure that the interests that are affected are properly balanced. Having said that, the following has to be taken into account from my perspective. Firstly, anonymization, or at least a very strong pseudonymization, are the measures in this process. Secondly, the more non-anonymized data, that means personal information, is affected, the stricter and clearer the conditions under which access to this personal data can be granted. Thirdly, in the light of the significant interference with the right of privacy, we could also think about a supervisory body, such as a court, which must review such measures before they are implemented. We are familiar with such a process from the criminal procedural law. I hope this answers this difficult question at least to a certain extent. Back to you, Dan.
Great. Thanks, Lars. Of course, one question that does come up quite frequently from companies is the question of an enforcement. And so I'd like to direct this one to Mark. Mark, what's your sense of what's going to happen when the current crisis is passed and regulators, frankly, have more time to consider their enforcement philosophies? Do you think they'll aggressively enforce the rules here? Could you maybe tackle this question, please?
Sure. Well, my sense is I don't expect regulators to aggressively enforce the rules. Equally, I don't think it will be a free-for-all. You know, otherwise, we could have wrapped up this webinar in 2 minutes. But I expect that regulators, especially in the UK and Ireland, will adopt a pragmatic approach. You know, picking up on a point that Christoph made, I'll be interested to see how actions in practice match what regulators publish. You know, if nothing else, in the short term, what capacity are regulators actually going to have to enforce? It's an open question. And it's just too hard to tell. We don't know how long this is going to extend for, this current period of time, how regulators will look at things. But I imagine that guidance will evolve, and we'll all need to keep an eye on how that evolves and how practices evolve. One thing I would say is that I expect that more rigid positions may soften as the health crisis intensifies in certain countries. You know, obviously some countries are ahead of the curve than others. Let's see how stringent regulators continue to be when the reality on the ground gets worse.
Thanks, Murray. That's a very good point. So for our final question, we were asked about the application of the EU's anti-spam rules, where companies are trying to reach their customers and contacts under what is obviously exceptionally difficult circumstances. We were asked, the current lockdown makes it hard to reach clients and prospects and have FaceTime with them. Do you think regulators will accept a relaxation of the anti-spam rules to reach out to clients, for example, by email? Christoph, would you be able to address this one, please?
Sure, thank you, Dan. And it's a question that was mainly asked by life science companies who are heavily reliant on face-to-face contact with life science professionals. And obviously nowadays that's very hard. and they are looking for other avenues to reach out to these people. I think that's an area where, to be honest, that there will be little sympathy from regulators, because it's a purely commercial activity. And I find it hard to believe that regulators would have a lot of sympathy of companies now starting to send massive amounts of emails to health professionals because they can't have personal email meetings. These health professionals have a lot of things to do. So it's not something that I would recommend. And again, it's not something I think regulators will look at in a very positive way. Also, in other areas, anti-spam rules are generally fairly rigorously enforced. So even under the circumstances, I'd be careful taking a too liberal approach to marketing by email and kind of taking a too relaxed approach to that.
All right. Well, thanks. With that, it concludes the question and answer segment. Although if you do have additional questions, please submit those to us and we'll respond to you as soon as we can. We appreciate the questions that you have submitted and hope you found the briefing call useful. We, on this end, will continue to monitor developments and post blogs on inside privacy in an effort to make sure you remain informed. We'll be paying to two matters in particular, which have been alluded to. First, whether existing guidance in the countries presently adopting a more conservative stance, like Belgium or France, will liberalize and become more permissive to respond to the greater perceived threat to public health, like we saw in Italy. Certain industries performing critical roles such as healthcare, research and development, public utilities, telecoms, law enforcement, or even food production and supply could conceivably be required to proactively gather health data on staff to avoid some catastrophic disruption. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. And then second, there's the question of whether regulators will be motivated to enforce these rules or adopt a more pragmatic approach, just as Mark was discussing at the end. Particularly when things revert to something resembling normal. Well, time will tell. We're obviously in our chartered territory here, but rest assured we'll be reporting back on these and any other developments or trends as soon as we learn of them. So we'll just close on that note. We thank you for your attention and time today. On behalf of the Covington Privacy and Cyber Practice, we all want to wish you and yours the best and hope that you remain safe and healthy. Goodbye.
And this does conclude our conference call for today. You may all now disconnect.